welcome to Hold Up, a podcast that loves to find an excuse to talk about a hit NBC comedy. My name is Grace. I'm here with my co-host Hudson. Hudson, how you doing?
Hey, you know, I'm doing pretty well. We watched one of my my old favorite TV shows, not current favorite. How are you feeling?
Good. I loved 30 Rock when it was on. I've said this many times on this podcast that I loved the Thursday night NBC comedy lineup. So The Office was my favorite, but I loved 30 Rock. Although I have not done a 30 Rock rewatch like I've done with many of the other shows, The Office, Community, Parks and Rec. Never done the 30 Rock rewatch. And I feel like it had some controversy recently when they had some episodes taken. Yeah. So I don't know if I want to do the 30 Rock rewatch.
Well, they've removed those episodes from streaming services, so you can't even see those episodes. I wish it was that they didn't remove the episodes, just cut the content out that wasn't.
Or put a thing, you know, at the beginning of the episode or something, you know, I don't know. But yeah, we watched 30 Rock, a very, very early on episode of 30 Rock, season one, episode 3, Blind Date. So very early on its run. I was thinking as I was watching this episode that it definitely feels like an early episode, and that I don't think, as many of these other hit comedies, did not find its footing right away, I think. And so I was a little... you know, this gave me a reason to confirm that I maybe shouldn't rewatch 30 Rock at least anytime soon.
So I want to push back on that a little bit because I've maybe rewatched 30 Rock. It's one of those shows for me. It's like my background show. So I can't even count the amount of times I've seen the entire series through. And I would say like it starts in its groove probably towards the second half of the first season, with season two being the best season of the entire series. And definitely season two is totally worth a rewatch. It's just so funny. Like Sandwich Day, where Liz Lemon, she either can have...
Oh, yeah.
She either can run after Floyd in the airport or eat her sandwich with its dipping sauce that she can't get through airport security with. And she decides that she can have them both. So she downs her sandwich and runs... catches up with him. It was amazing.
My point is just like this episode was like, I thought not particularly strong, but like, yeah, as I was saying, like a lot, The Office, it's a whole first season. The six episode first season is like not particularly strong. Parks and Rec has a really weak first season until it finds its groove in the second season. So luckily this got like a full pickup order, like on its first season. And I do think it does come into its own. And again, I think it's like very, very funny. I think there's moments that like are some of the funniest things I've seen on TV. Even if I think that like, I think a lot of other shows are probably more balanced, whereas I think 30 Rock, to me at least, had like more highs and lows, where I like come out of an episode being like, yeah, that was okay. I come out of an episode being like, that was hilarious. That's like some of the funniest stuff I've ever seen. My point was just like, this one episode did not, you know, make me, you know, rush to go watch the rest. But I believe you that it does get better. And even the stuff, you know, comedy changes, even the stuff we're joking about it being like the stuff that they've removed.
When did you like watch, so when that was, when it was airing, did you watch it while it was airing? Did you jump in
the only way I've ever watched 30 Rock is literally watching the episode every week on TV. And yeah, that's the only way I've ever watched it. I was on right away because it came out after, I don't know when. So this is 2006, 2007, 2006. So this is right around The Office. And I was in from The Office from the very beginning. I'm trying to think of when so The Office started in 2005. So I think by the time The Office was like, people thought it was good, even though I thought it was good already. I was definitely watching 30 Rock. In that comedy block on NBC.
Yeah, I wasn't. I actually, as someone who became later on very obsessed with the show, I didn't actually start watching it until season three, really. I like watched the first two seasons my freshman year in college before the third season started, and just like fell in love with it and then kept going. But I actually had watched this episode after it aired because I like... used to follow this website called After Ellen, which, rest in peace. I don't know if it's still around, but if it is still around, don't go to it because it's run by TERFs. But they were like, there was like, Liz Levin goes on a date with a woman in this episode. I was like, oh, that's fun. I'll watch this show. And I wasn't impressed, sadly, and did not continue watching it. But I was also 16, so I am I probably just didn't give it a good enough chance and was just a judgmental 16-year-old who didn't understand all the jokes either.
One of the things that, like, I sort of, the thing that I was thinking about, like, when I was excited to go back and rewatch a 30 Rock episode is that it can be so ungrounded in its, like, satire sometimes. Like, the stuff that they're doing is so out there and it's so funny, that this episode felt so run-of-the-mill sitcom. Like, I do think there is a thing where, like, a sitcom needs something to make it stand out. And I do think that they thought, okay, it's like a spoof of Saturday Night Live, basically, but like Liz Lemon runs the show and she has to deal with her boss. Like, that will be enough. And I don't think that, like, they found the absurdity of their comedy until later in the show. And so this just felt so by the numbers sitcom-y. There are some ways in which, like, I think the way that they portray a lesbian on the show is feels better than some other stuff I've seen, which we can get into. But I think from, like, just like, you know, critiquing a comedy show, you know, who am I to critique 30 Rock, literally one of, like, the best written shows of all time. But, like, for me, this one was just like, yeah, that was fine.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Like, it also felt very stiff. Like, mm-hmm. they weren't comfortable in their characters yet. Especially Tina Fey. I think, you know, she wasn't, like, known as a performer on SNL, so
yeah, she did Weekend Update and so on, but yeah, she didn't really have, like, breakout characters or things like that. Yeah,
I think she only pretty much did Weekend Update, right? So I it makes sense.
Yeah, I think she might have been in the Seth Meyers role of it all. Yeah,
so it makes sense why she might not be super comfortable, but yeah, it was just weird. Like, it felt very much like a different show, and, like, also with, like, this is such a nitpicky thing, but that is not her apartment the rest of the series.
Yeah.
Like, maybe they just never show the kitchen in the future, but that's definitely not what her kitchen looked like. Like, that looked like something from the set of, like, Ugly Betty, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, this is the third episode, right? So it's not the premiere, which is, like, typically so much setup. Like, what is the premise of the show? We're kind of, like, and then even, like, an episode past that, where, like, you know, the fallout from the premiere, and, like, okay, what is this going to be like? And so this episode is very, I thought about watching the one right before it because I wanted to see how formulaic the show felt. Like, okay, and I, you know, this is a thing that a lot of these, you know, great comedies do, where, like, you know, the A plot, the B plot, the C plot of it all. I just thought, like, there wasn't, so in terms of Liz's storyline, you can get into it. So basically, Jack wants to set up Liz, and the whole, like, thing here is that Jack thinks she's a lesbian, so he's going to hook her up with a woman. So she meets on the date, and then Liz is kind of taken back by that, and then eventually kind of, like, realizes that she actually, like, likes being friends with this woman anyway. And so then they have more interactions where, like, a lot of people are like, you should just date her. You should just date her. She's great. And eventually, like, the lesbian is the one that kind of gets, like, sick of hanging out with Liz. And Liz chooses to, like, I want to get the name of the woman.
Gretchen
is the one to, like, ultimately, like, not want to hang out and sort of leave Liz alone. And so that whole storyline, to me, it's like, that's fine. That's a little more modern. I really like the scene when, is it, did she come over for poker night? Mm-hmm. And they go as friends, and they're all kind of being like, Liz, she's a catch. Like, you should date her. And I think, like, to me, that felt pretty modern in the sense of, like, this is not, like, oh, scandalous. Like, it's two women. Like, it's all the guys kind of, like, being like, she's freaking great. Like, you should just date her, you know, is, like, kind of a fun take on what would otherwise be, like, you accidentally got set up with a woman. So there's some there. But the other storylines certainly don't do, like, this is not peak Kenneth. This is, like, very basic Kenneth of, like, he's a little, like, he doesn't know what he's doing, but he's, like, ends up being competent at his job. And Jack being a power hungry guy who wants to, like, figure out everyone's tails. But yeah, the episode was kind of, to me, paint by numbers.
Yeah, it definitely was paint by numbers. Like, I honestly, like, don't even have a lot of notes other than, like, observations about just, like, how it kind of differs from future episodes and the future season. And also just, like, also I did definitely noted, like, was it a big deal not to be, like, you know, like, weirded out by being hit on by, like, someone of your same gender back in 2007? Like, was it like, were they normalizing it, or was it already normalized, the question? I mean, maybe in New York, where this takes place, it was a lot more normalized. But
it
yeah.
felt not homophobic, which yeah. is a like a compliment I can give not many shows that we watch, especially comedies.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there was like, there were some jokes at lesbians' expense, like
sure,
her shoes are bicurious. Mm-hmm. There was like a flashback where Liz is like, where Gretchen says, you know, is this the first time someone's mistaken you for a lesbian? And then she flashes back to previous times people have, oh. and one of them was like the women's PE coach in high school being like, Lemon, don't let these girls, you know, make fun of you for who you are inside. And
even that is like flashing back to a high school gym coach who's basically like affirming someone being a lesbian. I guess like the joke there is also that she's a lesbian, I guess, maybe the gym coach, maybe, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say, certainly, yeah, even as she's a baby, they're like, wow, she's a lesbian. Like, it's like a joke in there. All yeah. the flashbacks like keep going back in time until she's like basically just been born. They're like,
What a beautiful little lesbian.
Yeah, but even that, I feel like, I don't know, that to me does not feel, you know, and other people might have a totally different take to feel like, yeah, that's great. To me, that doesn't feel hurtful. I don't know. I guess maybe some people could read it that way, but
yeah, I mean, it was a little like queer baity. I think 30 Rock sure. has kind of a history of queer baiting, and they never had a single character who was openly queer.
Who's the guy? There's a writer on the show who he is, and then he was an actor. He's openly gay. He comes on like late in the run. He's like kind of like gosh, he gives me a little bit like Uncanny Valley vibes. Do you know what I mean? He's like tall. He's got like these very
you're not talking about
piercing eyes.
The guy who was like he also was in Glee, and he does like guest hosting. Cheyenne Jackson, is that who you're talking about?
Let me Google Cheyenne. Yes, I am talking. Is he gay?
He's gay in real life, but his character yes. is not gay. His character very
is he like, dating has, Liz.
Dates Liz for a little bit, and then okay. his character disappears from the show. Okay. Yeah, I don't think he wrote for the series either. I think he just was
oh, it. Is it? Was he not a writer on the show?
No, he's no. so yeah. He just like yeah. I just remember he had a moment that year like where he was on Glee and that show and some other stuff all at the same time, and I was like, who is this guy? Mm-hmm. He was like in Xanadu the musical also, which was supposed to be a very good musical. I'm sad I never saw it when I was.
He just plays a partner of. He just plays a partner. Just plays yeah.
So yeah, he plays like the new cast member who gets after they fire Josh.
Oh, okay. That's if he's a cat, I feel like that's like to me that's close enough that he could be a writer on the show. That makes like because the show is about like the writing and performing of sketches. So I feel like that's like to me I'm like, yeah, pretty much nailed it.
But yeah, like after the fourth season, he like pops up like once every like 15 episodes. It's very funny. And they make jokes about it. But yeah, there's like no character on the show who's like openly gay. They have like several episodes. They love going into the gay pool, dipping their toes in it. I could probably list off 8 or 9 episodes where this happens. And I guess you could consider Jenna Maroney a bit of like a trisexual in the sense that she would try anything.
There's also the Will Forte character is very like I want to say complex. It's very clearly a bit and it's a joke, so I don't know how like I would like, you know, be giving it like adoration, but like he dresses up as Jenna, right? He's like a Jenna impersonator who then they yeah. date, right?
They get married.
Yeah,
That's like the queerest relationship on the show. And like Jenna is like, you know, jokes about how she impregnates him, like tries to get him pregnant and everything right. like that. So they right. have the queerest relationship of anyone in the series, I would say. And I kind of love that she is like, you know, she dates someone who doesn't conform to their, you know, any sort of stereotypes to their assigned sex at birth, which
it's perfect because cool. she would only do that as somebody who wants to be Jenna.
Yeah.
Like who wants to, yeah. Yeah.
Basically.
I think it's very clever. I don't know. Yes. I think it's clever writing.
They met at a Jenna Maroney impersonation contest where she came in third.
Right.
I don't know why, like 30 Rock is one of those shows that I could win a trivia contest for.
So my two favorite 30 Rock bits that really stick in my head, maybe if I rewatch it, I would have different ones, but the ones that like really stand out to me. So one is Werewolf Bar Mitzvah. is certainly like some of the funniest thing. And then the other one is the gosh, you have to what does it end up being? The Janis Joplin.
Oh yes.
Documentary that Janis, it ends up being like Jackie Joplin or whatever, because they Jackie just like Jorp, can't Jorp. They can't have the rights to anything that sounds close to, they just keep having to switch it. It's so friggin' funny.
That was a really good storyline. And fun fact about Werewolves Bar Mitzvah, it was not Tracy Morgan who was on the recording. It was actually Donald Glover.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. Donald Glover, I think, came to fame right up, but one of his big breaks was being a writer on 30 mm-hmm. Rock. Yeah.
Yeah, and they had him on the last episode that he worked on. He had a bit role, and then I was like, oh, it's that guy from who's on that episode of 30 Rock who's in Community now.
Yeah, he blew up after that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting to see like all the people who did come out of that show, you know, pretty big. I mean, I guess really just Donald Glover. Who else?
I can't think of many people who were like, you know, in that same way who like are known for writing on the show or being like a background actor in the show. But I love going back now and watching some of these shows where like you like see the small guest star role of somebody who like ends up making it pretty big is super fun, I think, in these like especially around this era where like when they showed up as like in a background role in 2006, I have no idea who they are, and then like 5 years later they're like starring, they're like the supporting actor in some show, and I'm like, oh, it's that person. And when you go back, it's so fun. The other one, actually, I forgot my other favorite bit from 30 Rock. I love Leo Spaceman.
Leo Spaceman's great.
There's one where he calls he has to call 911, but he actually calls like 411 or whatever, and he's like, I don't know, diabetes, and then it's just like he's like, because he has to like give like, what information are you looking for? Leo Spaceman, an A+ TV comedy character. But yeah, I don't think anybody else really from like anybody who had like, James Marsden was, I think, kind of big before he was on the show, and he had a long run. Jason Sudeikis appeared. John Hamm has a really memorable run on the show, but I don't think any of the like, unfortunately, none of the supporting actors I've seen. What's the bald headed guy?
Oh, the guy who played Pete.
Scott Adsit. He's been in a bunch of stuff. Yeah. He's kind of like, you see him around all the time. Nobody else. Not been going well for Alec Baldwin recently.
Yeah, well, Alec Baldwin I've disliked since those phone calls of him screaming and calling his daughter a pig surfaced. So I don't mind. Yeah, as long as I don't run into him in Manhattan, because apparently he...
Oh, really?
He lives in Manhattan.
Oh.
Yeah. He'll hear this and be like, oh, that podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'd love to go, you know, I feel like we don't have too much to say about this episode in general, other than it's, like, pretty good representation for the time.
Yeah.
You know, obviously there's no kiss or anything, because, like, Liz isn't interested in this person, and, you know, Gretchen, you know, states her, you know, her piece that she's not interested in chasing this straight girl, so she's not going to go to apply to Amazing Race with Liz Lemon. She's not going to allow Liz to keep calling her Gail, as an Oprah Gail, which was like the big rumor was like that Oprah was a lesbian back.
Yeah, I forgot about that. The show is full of that's the other thing, because there's so the writing is so topical as well. So I forgot that some of that stuff will certainly that passed me. But yeah, I didn't even think about that. I was like, oh yeah, they're friends. But no, it's actually like a reference to the fact that like everyone thought Oprah and Gail might be in a relationship.
Yeah, and then there's the Tom DeLay reference, which like he's like a pretty disgraced former. Was he the Secretary of Defense, I think. He was a member of the Bush administration. I think he had to resign in disgrace.
House Majority Leader. Yeah.
Okay. I feel like he had a scandal.
Let's see.
Maybe not. Yeah, let's campaign see. Finance stuff.
Oh yeah, Jack Abramoff scandal. Yeah. Yeah, he's given some gifts. Yeah, the show is so like, yeah, it's commenting on current events. So that's another reason why, like, to me, I haven't been rushed to get back into it as well, is that potentially the jokes are, you know, it's like watching The Simpsons sometimes. Yeah. You're like, I bet that was really funny at the time. Like, really, really funny. Yeah.
Yeah, it's also one of those things where, like, you kind of have to, like, you're not going to catch, like, this episode, not so much, but there are some episodes where they say references, like, so-and-so and so-and-so, and you're like, what the heck does that even mean? But I also learned a lot from that
joke. I think especially as the writing gets better, I think, as they know what their shtick is, what the thesis statement of the show is. I feel like at this point they don't have it, so.
Yeah, you know, I think you might actually want to watch some later episodes because they end up putting a lot of sport references, apparently. I didn't know this, but I was, like, listening to someone talk about how there's, like, a ton of sports references throughout the entire series. And, like, obviously they go right over my head as someone who does not follow that vertical.
But the problem will be that they'll be outdated.
Yeah, so you're like, I don't remember U.S. sports from 2009.
Yeah. So this movie was nominated for at the 18th GLAAD Media Awards for Outstanding Individual Episodes in a Series Without a Regular Gay Character.
So hilarious. Specific.
So specific. It lost. Let me see if I can find what it lost to. So it lost to an episode of Grey's Anatomy, Where the Boys Are. And it was up against American Dad, Cold Case, and How I Met Your Mother.
American Dad.
American Dad, yeah. Yeah.
What was the How I Met Your Mother episode? Like one with Barney's brother? Probably.
It's called Single Stamina. Yes, it's
that's with his brother.
Ted Warren's Robin the James, just like it's with his brother. This is Wayne Brady, right? Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, this episode was nominated.
Yeah, and I mean, like, at the time people really liked it. Like, even like I said, did I already mention After Ellen? I did mention it, that they really like. Yeah, they really like the episode, which is like really cool to hear. And yet, like, it, you know, back then people were saying this is like, you know, a good start to the show. I did read one review where they said like it seems like they're still trying to get their footing. So yeah, I mean, like, it's an interesting view at what's, it's like such a shell of what it becomes though. Like, it's like just like the outline, because it gets, like you said, it gets so weird and so strange. And like, even like the stuff with like where they play with gender and sexuality gets really weird, because I think, yeah, like every season there's multiple like episodes that include a gay character. Like, there's very famously Will Arnett's character, who is
I forgot about Will Arnett's character.
He's considered the gay Jack Donaghy, so he's like the rival to becoming CEO of GE to Jack.
Oh my god, I forgot about that. Does that stuff hold
up? I feel like it does, because Jack isn't ever homophobic towards him. He like doesn't hate him for being gay. He hates him for being his rival, and he like tries to take him down through like his Gavin's attraction to Kenneth. And Kenneth is totally chill with like seducing him as well, you know, and like does it in a very funny manner where he's just like dancing in his page outfit.
Well, the Kenneth stuff is interesting, because I feel like there's a world in which like you could read him as he might be queer, but he's also, he has this like actually is like much more like southern like Christian Republican-ishness to, like, he's very clearly been like, not, I don't say brain, I guess brainwashed is maybe the best way to describe his specific character. But
there was a guy who was on Top Chef a few years ago who like very much reminds me of Kenneth, and he's also straight, like he's married to a cis woman, and I'm just like, really? I can't remember his name, but he appeared on the Rob as a podcast, the wrap up for Top Chef. Like, you guessed it on it. God, I cannot remember his name.
Is Jack McBrayer's gay, right?
So I don't think he's out, but there's definitely been whispers about it.
Interesting.
Yeah, like, he's
not my place.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And yeah, I feel like he hasn't really done much, I feel like, since 30 Rock. I feel like Kenneth was just such a, it was one of those roles, it's just like you can't get out of it. Like, he just was Kenneth, and like anything else I ever saw him in, he was Kenneth. It's like the only time I didn't think of him as Kenneth is when he did the voice for Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah, I was gonna say he's done a lot of voice work since then. Yeah. Since that, I think he's been on a bunch of TV, but he's like been in DuckTales. Big Mouth. He does so much voice.
Oh yeah, he's Big Mouth. I mean, when he was on Big Mouth, I'm like, that's Kenneth, when I heard the voice.
He's a very interesting character. I love, there's a very memorable line where like Jack is or he's talking about, he's just like, I don't vote up, but I go in and I put a ballot down, I wrote it for God, and Jack's like, we count this for Republicans.
Yeah, that was, oh God. There's the evisceration of Republicans is great, but then, you know, it didn't really affect them that much. I don't want to get into it, but we're not here to talk.
There's an interesting, like, I think, of this time period as well, maybe a little bit before, of the, like, the satire of the, like, of that type of right wing figure from the 2000s ish on, where I think like Stephen Colbert, you know, doing full like Republican satire. Mm-hmm. I think Jack fits that mold. There's a few others, but
yeah,
it's an interesting period where then I think everyone was like, maybe not, maybe we won't do that anymore. Colbert was like, I'm done.
Yeah. There was a, what's his name? Is it John Slattery? He was on Mad Men. Is that his name? The Silver Fox. Yeah, so yeah. He is an episode of 30 Rock where, Jack is supporting his, do you pause?
Nope.
So he's in an episode of 30 Rock where he is a candidate for like Senate or Congress against someone played the senator. I guess it's a senator played by Queen Latifah, who is like grilling Jack on like the merger of GE and Comcast, Cabletown, as it's called in NBC and Cabletown, and he's basically like a proto-Trump, this character, like completely incompetent and is just like running because like he can, and like Jack like basically decides he can't even stoop that low to support this guy, which, you know, we wish that's how conservatives were these days, but they can't even be that. Yeah, it's kind of wild that I'm just pulling all this. Like, I'm not looking this up, you know? I'm just... this is coming from my brain. Yeah. Like, why do I have this in my brain and not, like, I don't know, like, advanced coding techniques? Like...
I don't know. Yeah, your 30 Rock knowledge.
I mean, there's another gay character who's in the James Franco episode of where... Liz outs her cousin to her family, and he comes to stay with her in New York City, and basically he's like, hey, we're gonna give you a makeover, and she's like, is that gonna be fierce? And he's like, if it was 2004, maybe. And then he locks her in a closet so that he can go out partying, and she thinks he's gonna be like the small town gay boy who doesn't know what he's doing, but instead he just becomes like just really falls into New York City's like gay culture, which was really funny. And then the actor actually went on to be on Search Party, and I was like, is that Liz's cousin? And it was.
I love Search Party.
You love Search Party?
Did you watch? Yeah.
I don't, good. I recently finished the last season and it was,
it gets very weird. Speaking of shows that get very weird.
Yeah. I mean, that show, we're not probably never going to talk about that show, but if you haven't watched that show, people watch that show.
talk about it just for I can't even remember the names. I watch too many TV. What's the friend's
Portia?
Name? Who lies?
Oh, I can't remember his name.
Elliot. Yeah, we should talk about Elliot at some point.
Elliot's husband.
Yeah. Anyway,
is played by the guy who played her cousin.
Oh, okay.
So that's where it comes from.
Yeah, I mean, so it's interesting that, like, I think that, like, we kind of thought this episode was, like, nothing bad, not terrible representation. And I was, it's funny, that article that you're talking about from After Ellen, where they're like, this is, like, kind of one of the best single-episode lesbian sitcom characters in Gretchen. Like, that's so sad. Makes sense for the time, I think, like, 2006. Like, there aren't, like, in terms of, like, someone coming in for a one-episode stint and being sort of, like, the gay character. There's, like, nothing really wrong with her specifically, and so, but gosh, she's so boring. It's so sad that that's the best representation.
Lesbian representation was really bad back then. I remember, like, I was like, you know, trying to find whatever scraps I could find, and I think the next closest thing to come out was maybe like South of Nowhere, which was like this teen lesbian drama that was on the N, aka the channel that had Degrassi. We should do an episode on Degrassi. You know, it's coming back, that HBO is rebooting it.
Yes.
I can't wait. If I ever visit Toronto, I'm going to Degrassi Street.
Okay. I'll come with you. Yeah.
So there really wasn't much. There was that, and then there was like, there was like nothing. Like, there were like gay dudes on a bunch of shows, and there was like, yeah, no lesbian, like, I mean, I feel like lesbians have always had, like, in terms of representation in TV and film, has always had the worst representation in general. I think even these days, there's like not as much compared to, like, it's so much easier, it feels like, for them to just add a gay male character onto a show than to add a lesbian character. Like, maybe that's because people just, like, it's the stereotypes of gay men are much easier to make comedy out of than the stereotypes of lesbians.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's also, you know, often in, like, perhaps in, like, you know, a cast, you know, in terms of there might be one lead and then some supporting characters, like, you know, I guess there are shows that have done, like, the full, like, you know, if it's like an ensemble cast, it's like half men, half women. But certainly it feels like, you know, there's just often more male roles. So I wonder how much they're kind of like, okay, we can make one of the men characters gay, but if we, you know, if we only have one woman character and then she's a lesbian, like, too much, mm-hmm. you know, which is pretty shitty. But
yeah, that was an era of being like, yeah, it's the boys and this one woman, yeah, as our token, yeah, woman. Yeah, but mm-hmm. even as shows started becoming like more even in terms of gender, like, still it was always like, we're gonna add a random gay guy, like, I think, like Happy Endings, where they have,
yep,
that character.
I, you know, the one thing I will say about Happy Endings that I did think that, like, it was one of the first times I felt like I was watching something in a mainstream show where the character wasn't fit a lot of the stereotypes we had about, like, the gay character in a show, was certainly something. He was kind of this, like, I don't know, bro in many ways that, like, was also gay. Actually, I don't know. For me at the time, especially, you know, we've talked a lot about how, like, our worldviews can be a little bit different in the sense that, like, I'm often coming from much more, like, mainstream stuff, whereas I feel like you watched more maybe indie stuff than I did. But I felt certainly at the time that it was like, he's not, like, fitting a bunch of stereotypes. It was very interesting to me with that character in Happy Endings.
Yeah, you know, I do think he was actually quite a breakthrough in that. Yes, I think that's what I'm trying to say. In that sense, because, yeah, like, I mean, we're not talking about Happy Endings right now, but, like, it was interesting to see. And they even brought in, like, he has a friend who is, like, a more, like, flamboyant and feminine person. And they, like, bring that character in, I feel like, as, like, kind of the foil to him in terms of his gayness. And I think, you know, the fact that he's played by a straight man who is kind of a D-bag in real life, it's kind mm-hmm. of soured that character for me, sadly.
Is he a D-bag in
real
life?
I remember...
The guy from Happy Endings?
I used to be, I mean, I'm still a very online person, but I was a very online person in the TV forums back in the day, like Television Without Pity. And people were talking about how he would, like, he was, like, harassing people on Twitter, like, in a very straight bro kind of way.
Adam Pally. Yeah. That sucks.
Yeah, so I just don't like him, which is a shame. But that show, that might be interesting to watch again, but the first couple episodes of that show were, I feel like, rougher than any of the other, like,
definitely a show that needs to find its footing to know what it is.
Yeah, yeah. That, like, I, like, it got good, but it, whew, those, like, first five or six episodes, like, I was like, this is, like, I was watching it while it was coming out. I remember I was, like, in college, and me and my roommates would watch it, like, on Fridays with Community. Do you feel like with Gretchen, do you feel like they tried to make her into, like, kind of like a lesbian stereotype? Because I kind of feel like they did in a way.
Yeah, I do think that there's ways in which you could say that she fits the lesbian stereotype. Yeah,
because, like, well, she's an engineer, and I'm like, I feel like they're, like, made mm-hmm. her engineer because that's a masculine, you know, coded job, especially in 2007. She does mm-hmm. have a deeper voice, which, you know, it's also associated with masculinity in some ways. They have her wearing these ugly ass, like, pantsuits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know if they have her speaking the way she does because that's, like, they want the people to be like, she's the top. She's a long-haired butch. Or
like, that's how she talks. Yeah, I don't know. I guess she's been in a bunch of Law and Order. I don't really know her from anything else. Stephanie March. Looking at her IMDb, I don't recognize her from anything else. She was in Happy Endings.
Oh, wow. It all comes full circle.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not really in anything else I've seen. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't really, yeah, much else to say about this episode. I always had a hope that she would come back, because, like, there would be interviews with, like, people who had been guest stars on the show, like, her, Isabella Rossellini, and they'll be like, I'd love to come back for another story arc. And I was like, what if she hooks up with Jenna? And then that never happened.
Yeah. That would be good, yeah. But Jenna gets the most progressive relationship on the show.
I mean, well, Jack ends up being in, like, a... In the series finale, he's in a throuple with two of his former lovers.
I don't remember that at all. Yeah. I remember having he has a baby, and it's almost born in Canada, so it can't never be pregnant.
Yeah.
I remember
that. Well, that's not technically true, because, you know, Ted Cruz was born in Canada, and he still ran for president.
True. All right. Should we ask the question? Yeah. Does it hold up?
Yeah, you know, I think it does. Like, I think in the sense of it being, like, not problematic, especially compared to future episodes that, you know, people take issue with, that, you know, they're about blackface, so I don't really feel like I have anything to say about that. But, yeah, it's definitely not offensive. Like, it doesn't hold up in the sense that there's a lot of references that fly over people's heads these days. But, yeah, like, a non-homophobic episode of television is the least we could ask for back, or the most we could ask for back then.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think it holds up. It's perfectly fine. As I said, it feels very... it did not feel 30 Rock to me. So in that way, you know, that's not really where I, like, am like, it doesn't hold up. It doesn't feel like 30 Rock. It holds up because it's, like, perfectly fine LGBTQ representation. That's, like, not homophobic, basically. So, yeah, it holds up. I think the episode's a little boring. It's not, like, something I would be like, you must watch this episode. It's great representation. But it's totally fine if someone, like, watched it. Yeah, they will not walk away from this episode, I think, having, like, any feelings, whether you're, like, LGBTQ, like, you won't be, like, feeling icky after you've watched it, and if you're, like, straight, it's fine, you can watch this, there will no bad thoughts in your head afterwards, I feel like, you know? Yeah. All right, what are we doing next
week? Oh, yeah, next week, I'm excited about this one. So, back in the 90s, before there was The Matrix... there was Bound, which was a feature-length film that the Wachowski sisters made about the wife of a gangster and the lesbian contractor who she has an affair with. And it's a movie I have not seen since I was a teenager. I feel like this is kind of a theme for me, is that whenever I'm like, oh yes, this movie, I have not seen it in the X amount of years.
And I've never seen it. It's typically what happens.
And I only ever saw it once, so I'm really excited to rewatch it. This is, like, the first thing that we're watching for the podcast since I've been with my partner that she's going to want to actually watch with me. So I'm, like, looking forward to getting her opinion, and maybe I'll add some of her thoughts into it. And actually, we were going to go see it. It was playing at a theater in New York City, and then the Omicron wave happened, and so we were like, we're not going out at all during this very high COVID period.
It has Chris Maloney in it, which is very exciting, from Law and Order, and Joe Pantoliano, who is then in The Matrix, and then the two leads, Gina Gershon and Jennifer Tilly, will be very fun to watch. This is one that, like, I feel like... I see lists of, like, what LGBTQ movies, so what lesbian movies should watch. It's like, you should watch Bound. I'm intrigued to look at it from the lens of, yeah, this is a movie before The Matrix that's made by the Wachowskis. This isn't their first movie, right? Their first movie is Assassins. They wrote Assassins, I think. I don't know.
What I will say about this is interesting to see as, like, since,
it's their first directorial feature, so.
It's interesting to see as then before either of them were, I don't know, you know, maybe they were personally out at this point, either one of them or the other. I feel like Lana came out a lot earlier than Lily. But, like, you know, if they were really aware of the fact, you know, I feel Lana identifies as a lesbian, right? Or just as a queer woman?
I don't
but know. Interesting to see that, like, you know, when I watched as a teenager, I'm like, you know, like, knowing that, you know, before either of them were out and being like, why did two dudes make this movie? And now it makes a lot more sense why they would make this movie, even though it's not about transness in any way. But
I'm just trying to see here. I think I do think that so Lily is with someone named Mickey Ray Mahoney, who's a professor And then I think Lana is still married to her partner, who is Karen Winslow.
All I know is that Lana has had lesbian drama in the past, so that's why I was like, Lana's a lesbian.
I think that she's... Oh, no. Karen Winslow... Okay. Phew. Is still with Lana Wachowski, married since 2009. Before that, was married to Buck Angel.
So yes, that's the lesbian drama.
That's the lesbian...
Oh, yes, see, Buck outed Lana to the press.
Oh.
Because his ex-wife, or his estranged wife, was having an affair with Lana.
Well, Buck Angel sucks, so, you know.
He does.
No, that's bad. It's not bad. I guess not whatever. That's bad for him to do.
Buck Angel's the worst. Maybe one day we'll talk about Buck Angel and how he used to be a very aspirational and inspirational person to most trans masculine people.
Okay, but I don't want to
watch... We're not going to watch any of his movies. We can just talk about him. I don't want to watch any of his...
If people don't know, Buck Angel is a porn star, a transgender man.
But he's appeared on like trashy daytime talk shows also, so we could probably watch some of his clips and talk about him.
Yeah, he was very progressive, and then he's become a total TERF, which makes...
Yeah, he literally sides with J.K. Rowling and like all the like British TERFs out there. It's wild. He's like, being trans is a disorder, and I'm fixing myself. Like, it's really just...
Oof. Yeah, it's a weird one. Well, we're not talking about Buck Angel next week. We're talking about Bound, the 1996 film directed by the Wachowskis. That'll be fun. Hudson, where can people find you?
I'm really not up to much because my life is a lot of moving parts at the moment. But if you want to see, I don't really update my social media very much these days. But you can feel free to follow me, non-binary. It's going to be tagged in the Hold Up Instagram, which is Hold Up with 1P. I'm private, but if I see you follow Hold Up, I will follow you back and let you follow me as well. It's just, you know, I just like to keep the social media under wraps for me, you know. And what about you, Grace?
Yep. So doing some stuff over on Post Show Recaps covering Euphoria season 2. People are saying that last week's episode was the best of the series, which I think I might agree. It was very, very good. So doing that with Amon Adwin. Also doing coverage of Raised by Wolves, an HBO sci-fi show with Josh Wigler. And when we start back into season 2, we'll be joined by Taryn Armstrong. So that will be fun. Also doing movie coverage with Ariel. This week we're talking about Jackass Forever. I keep reading a bunch of hit pieces online. Not hit pieces, like think pieces online. That are like basically how LGBTQ people love Jackass, which I didn't really know that there was like this love, and specifically trans women as well are like, here's the reason why I love Jackass. So I am very intrigued to talk about it this week. Next week we're doing the Jennifer Lopez Owen Wilson movie Mary,
as featured on a Celebrity Big Brother recently.
Yes. So we'll be covering that. I think that's about it. I play D&D sometimes on twitch.tv/dmphilly, Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Check that out. I'm on Twitter @HiFromGrace. I think that's it. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.